This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest review preview mashup show. My name is Mike and I'm joined by preview maestro, an absolutely knackered father of a very young kid, Terence, along with the evergreen Nick Gillard. We're here to go over the rather depressing Monday evening defeat at everyone's, maybe except Palace's, happy place, Turf Moor, before looking ahead to a tough clash against the Toon. Join us after this.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
So, yeah, three of us got the short straw and we're covering the Burnley game for you. Terence, hello.
Yeah, hello. Maestro, I like it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll build you up and knock you down. Nick, how you doing?
Yeah, we did get the short straw, didn't we? I'm not so sure about evergreen, more grey today, but yeah, I'll take evergreen.
Good, good. Yeah, Hambo is very sadly off sick today. Might be because of his 9 weeks. He's 9 weeks now into his 800 calorie a day keto diet, and he's had no booze at all. So the thought of probably Terence cracking open a beer. What have you got today?
I've got a beer called Ha 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 by Tiny Rebel. It's a double oat DIPA, and it is on the eye it's golden, the taste is lemon and guava, and the nose is tropical sherbet. It's a shame Albert's not here.
Fuck's sake. Yeah, well, I mean, the fact it's called Ha 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 would be enough to annoy Hambo.
Well, it's absolutely named for this review, to be honest, after that performance. So
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I would have aptly, I bought a load of Stenhauser from Aldi. I'm sure you can tell me how much on Untappd that's got. But what it actually tastes like is a bowl of Shreddies. So, I mean, that tastes like absolute dirt, which is how we played yesterday. So I've put that away and I've got myself San Miguel. Yeah, so you're stuck with me, Mike, presenting. But my very able colleagues with me are going to talk you through the last few days at Palace. And we'll start off with Parrish's interview, Parrish's comments. And here's the man himself on refunds.
We decided the best choice was to go with the season tickets, put them on sale. We were absolutely blown away by how well people supported that. Obviously, there had to be something, an imperative to do that, save your seat or all the normal reasons. What's important now is we start refunding the money as quickly as possible to people. So we've had a period of games that obviously people haven't been able to attend. We'll refund the money for those as we go through. People want to take the money back. That's absolutely their prerogative. They'll be able to use it as a credit. They'll be able to invest it in the academy if they want. They'll be able to give it to the foundation. And that will happen fairly soon in the next couple of weeks. And we'll do that on a rolling basis. But of course, now I'm very hopeful that we will be able to get some fans in the stadium. Let's say it was back to the original 6,000. With 12,000 people that have paid, you know, that's every other game somebody can come to. Of course, we'll refund them for the one that they can't. If there are more fans allowed in the stadium, then fantastic.
Well, I mean, we know now that it's 4,000, so that'll be one in every three. I think I'll get your opinion on this, Nick, because obviously you had a pretty bad time of it with trying to get your season ticket renewed. So what do you think of his comments this week?
Yeah, it's hard for him, isn't it? Because they wanted to get the cash in. I kind of saw mine as an investment towards next season. I had the money. I managed to get the money together. And now it looks like I'm not going to be able to pay on a month-by-month basis ever again because they've gone over to the new credit company to do it. It was money in the bank for next year. So I won't be getting a refund. I certainly won't be investing in the academy. That's for certain. I'm not sure many people will. If we can go, we can go. Will is absolutely bursting to go to a game. I'm not sure how it will be with a lot less fans because that's part of the atmosphere, isn't it? It's part of the day. So it might be a bit sterile. My thing about it is they say you can do it if you're in a tier one. I can't remember what order the tiers are, but if you're in the sort of lowest risk, are they only going to invite people who live in the lowest risk areas who they've got in their database to go to the games, or are they just going to get, because people go from all over the country. I mean, you go from Hastings. I know people who go from Scotland to home games, travel overnight on the overnighter. So how are they going to stop people from high risk areas going into the ground and passing things on to people who've gone to the game from low risk areas? I mean, how do they organise that?
Well, as a man that's sat and listened to TalkSport today while I was at work for many more hours than perhaps a sane person should, I don't think they've come to the conclusion on that yet. But what I did hear was Brighton are the only club that would be in Tier 1. So could be a state where it's only the Amex where there's any fans in the Premier League.
I also heard something about the fairness of it, that actually, they might be better off not letting any fans in anywhere until fans can go everywhere because of the difference it makes to a team's performance if they've got supporters behind them. It's not fair if one team have got fans in and another team haven't.
No, absolutely, yeah. I mean, he made some other comments. He made a comment on the academy development. Let's have a listen to his comments on that and then let's hear what Terence thinks about it.
I think there'll be a better academy, facilities-wise, anywhere in the country. There'll be some that probably was good, but there won't be a better one. And there certainly won't be one in such an inner city area surrounded by so many kids that we can help. So from a footballing sense, it's already helping recruitment, it's helping retention. Everybody that's involved in our academy can see the excellent groups we've got down through the age groups. I think 10 of the academy have been training with the first team this week while everybody's been on international duty. I've had an hour-long conversation with Roy about kids in our academy and what ones he thinks this and he thinks that and can he develop this and can he develop that. It's just across the road, just the perfect level of remoteness but closeness, if that makes sense, to the first team. Now, and a manager that's already brought through Aaron Wan-Bissaka, already brought through Tyrick Mitchell, constantly having those boys able to go across the road, step up, have that moment training with the first team, often for periods of weeks, and a manager that's engaged in.
Well, Terence, I can imagine what bit of that statement jumped out at you. Let's hear your thoughts.
Well, I mean, it's a bit friendly saying that Aaron Wan-Bissaka, he brought him through. I mean, having an hour-long conversation with Roy is all well and proper, right?
Just the thought of having to deal with that, to be honest. But
it's more that, you know, great what Roy thinks about him. You can find that out, but all the way through this, what was this, 17-minute interview on YouTube with Steve Parrish about various things, a lot of it seemed to be leaning towards, well, it certainly made me think, and Hambo as well, we were talking about that it feels like he's going to get another year. So all those who thought that the light was at the end of the tunnel, it might get a bit further in the distance. But, you know, I don't think he bought for Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I think that was circumstances. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe there's more behind the scenes that we didn't know about. But, you know, Joel Ward got injured and there was no one else. That was basically that. Tyrick Mitchell was another one of those where it's kind of everyone got injured and that'd be that. But look, I think our academy got off track for a bit. I think getting to the Premier League as quick as we did, I don't think anyone expects us to get there and then stay there as we have. And then having long drawn out relegation battles for the first couple of seasons and then given a bunch of money for Pardew to try and push on from the good start he had. It kind of turned a blind eye to the academy. So it's great that we're getting back on track. We've got a couple of youngsters now in Wan-Bissaka who's moved on, Tyrick Mitchell who's in there, ones that are being talked about. You know, Scott Banks is looking good, albeit we actually brought him in, but he's still got to come through the academy in that sense. You know, there's a lot more promise there. And after a few years of losing some really, really good prospects, I forget names. I've got a few of them. One of them went to Germany. But, you know, we've been able to stave off. That was Egbo, wasn't it? Went to Germany. Yeah, so we've been out. Yeah, Mandel Egbo, he went to a German club. Didn't make it out. I think he's in the MLS now.
Okay.
Patrick O'Connor's probably screaming at me now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
we've managed to stave off some interest from Leeds in a player recently and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're giving youngsters world class facilities, as Steve Parish suggests, and you're seeing that there is a route through to the first team and Premier League minutes, then, you know, it can only be a good thing for us going forward. And, you know, I was reading some old programmes the other day from back in the 50s, and it's part of our identity all the way back that we bring through our own for our academy. And we should still be doing that now. It's our identity. Let's carry on with it.
Part of me hopes that when Steve said he was talking to Roy about the academy was saying, look, if we're playing crap like we did last night, then can't we at least get some of these players on the bench rather than having 16 defenders on there and maybe give them a chance? I hope he was saying that. Kind of in a way that, who was it? Was it Parrish in charge when there was a big bust up and we were playing poorly? Was it with Dougie Friedman? And suddenly we came out the next game and we played really, really well. I can't remember what chairman it was, whether it was Jordan or...
Well, there's been a couple of scenarios like that, but there was certainly...
The Millwall game sticks in my head, but...
No, the Millwall game, he sacked him. The Millwall game, he sacked George Burley. The famous Friedman one is in the car park of Bristol City when we lost 4-1.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they had a big Barney and, everything changed from the next game.
and let's have a quick bit from the man himself on update on the stadium redevelopment.
So we agreed to Section 106 with the council, which is all of the infrastructure that we need to contribute to around the stadium. The biggest stumbling block right now is trying to... We need a small slither of land from Sainsbury's. When I first looked at the club, at the time, one of the reasons that I kind of got more interested was Sainsbury's were basically saying they would build us a stadium. And then that became, we might contribute towards a stand. And that's now become... Well, if you want the car park, you've got to give us millions and millions of pounds and you've got to rebuild our car park. So, you know, they're a commercial organisation. We understand that. But I think what they're asking for is ridiculous. And at the moment, they're blocking the project, basically. It's fundamentally a ransom strip and they're holding us to ransom. So I hope that we can get somewhere negotiating with them. I think what they're asking for is ridiculous. A better stadium will only enhance their store. And we accept that we have to spend some money, give them some money for the small bit of land that we need. But we think what they're asking for is crazy. So we're looking at other avenues with the council.
What I can take from that is that the guy that's created all the supermarket home and away strips on Twitter that's been doing the rounds this week, nobody's going to be wearing his Sainsbury's home or away kit around Palace anytime soon. Thanks to cpfc.co.uk for those clips. Obviously, the full interview's on there. If you haven't watched it yet, I assume you probably mostly have. Bit of housekeeping before we get on. Reviews are the best way, other than word of mouth, which is always appreciated. Reviews from Apple Podcasts or anywhere else, just stick a nice few words up for us. Always helps us go up in the search results. You can catch us on YouTube. DR's been doing sterling work with all manner of people. You can get involved if you want to with analysis after games, that kind of thing. Our YouTube channel is going from strength to strength with DR's avoidance of his university work by doing that. And obviously we've got review and preview pods, usually at least two a week. So yes, please do subscribe. And then you don't need to keep remembering to have a look. It will just appear in your pod app. And one of the things we do on YouTube is a watch along of all the games. So if you don't want to watch the Sky commentary, you can often watch DR and Hambo. Yesterday, Hesketh of the preview pod put a tweet up at half time to say that he got his dog neutered yesterday, and that wasn't the worst thing about the day. And it led DR to talk about something rather strange. So let's just hear a quick clip of that, shall we, Sam, please? I've got a quote, Hesketh of the preview pod here, who tweeted at halftime to say, "My dog got his nuts chopped off today, and I'm not sure that was as painful as watching Palace so far."
Whoa, why? Did he get circumcised?
That's not what circumcision is, mate.
No.
Yeah, that is.
No, I'm circumcised. But is that like, is that what he's trying to suggest?
We'll have a little chat after the show. I've got some things I probably need to educate you on.
Yeah,
get circumcised.
But I mean, they can. But just so you know, for future reference, if someone tries to cut your balls off and they're saying it's a circumcision, it isn't. That's not what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to make of that, Terence. Your thoughts?
As an uncircumcised male, I would be very concerned to find out that chopping my balls off would be what a circumcision was, to be honest.
Yeah,
basically, you know, just another one in the long line of DR-isms, isn't it?
It is.
It's that clip.
Nick, are you a round head or are you a...
I'm not going to go into that, but if that clip isn't a reason to tune into the watch-alongs in future, I really don't know what is, because that's just gold, isn't it? Absolute gold. Yeah, I mean, he's right about the mouthwash in the end, wasn't he? So, you know, he might be right about the dogs having their nads chopped off. But yeah,
I mean, I just need to make clear that 99% of the watch along is not that entertaining. a bit more Palace news before we carry on to talk about the Burnley game. So the under 23s been on fire, and then a 4-3 victory away at Sunderland, a long trip and really 4-3 seemed to flatter Sunderland quite a bit. I think the one main talking point really is Keane Flanagan's goal. Terence, if you just want to talk us through that.
Oh, it's what a goal. I mean, it's we string together 19 passes before the goal is scored. I'm not sure if the first team string together 19 passes in total in the Burnley game. But it's a pass all around. Pretty much almost every player touches the ball, and it ends with a beautiful little 1-2 in a tight area, and puts Flanagan through, just slots it past the goalie. And I think the main Palace socials have been sharing it, so if you haven't seen it, go and have a look. It's well worth the watch. Lovely stuff. And if that's what we've got to look through or two from the academy, get very excited.
Yeah, absolutely. There's full match highlights on the Palace player as well. And then the women's team in the old Conti Cup, the Continental Cup, which I still don't really understand the rules for. So the London Bees, who have not been doing particularly well this season, I think they've been bottom for a lot of it. I think Cheltenham managed to usurp them at the bottom of the championship. But Palace end up with a 6-1 win after going 1-0 down. I think you just wanted to mention that the sending off, Terence.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we went 1-0 down to a beautiful goal, lovely little chip from about 30 yards. A Palace player got through one-on-one with a keeper, rounds a goalie, lofts the ball goalwards from a wide area, and it's going in. And the girl on the line, just beautiful tip onto the crossbar with her hand. And the referee doesn't see it. The lino one who sees it, and they're all trying to deny that she has handballed it. But the replays are very, very clear. I'm sure there's no VAR at that level. They're playing on a 3G pitch, so I doubt there's VAR. But it was quite the sight to see it beautifully saved onto the crossbar. But and then we really took advantage of the 10 men and looks quite comfortable. And yeah, as you say, I mean, the Bees look to be struggling, to be honest. So good result for the ladies.
Yeah, no, they don't seem to have a match for a while, but we'll bring you up to speed on the next one. And then one other bit of Palace news, just want to bring to your attention, and this was instigated by the HF, doing great work again, but this is across all supporters groups, really. The usual suspects, including the guys over in Poland, by the looks of it, but the Palace Christmas appeal, and they've... they've chosen the Salvation Army, who do sterling work in the winter months to help people out that are on the street and that kind of stuff. So there's a GoFundMe page that has been launched. It's on our socials. It's going to be on all the socials from any of the Palace supporters groups that you follow. So that'll be up there. But if you've got a few quid, you know, it's a tough time of year for a lot of people, and that's on a normal year, let alone the crap we're going through this year. So people haven't, you know, apart from anything else, when I see the homeless guy outside Tesco in Croydon, I can't remember the last time I had any money in my pocket because nobody's accepting it. So I started bringing the old pound coin and giving to him. But, you know, it's a tough time for everyone. So, yeah. Okay, let's get on to the Burnley match if we must. So, obviously, the talking point before the game, go to you, Nick, because I know you'd put him in your Pitch Sport team. Zaha, out with COVID, they kept it as a secret. I think Terence broke it to us about 2 minutes before the teams came out. So thoughts about the lineup?
Yeah, it was not unexpected, really, given that Zaha was out. My biggest thing with the lineup was more the bench than the actual people starting, because we had so many defenders on there, and the only real midfielder was Schluppi, who's a winger. So we didn't have much to change it up in the middle, save for being able to put Eze into the middle coming off from the wing. But I think Roy was actually hoping that Wilf would pass a test on the day of the match, and it didn't come through. But lots of people with their fantasy league teams as well. I think I had him as captain this week because I thought we'd score loads against what would seem to be a very, very poor Burnley side who couldn't score for Toffee. So no unexpected players in the baggage area, as it were.
I don't know what, you've been a Palace fan for 30 years, what possessed you to have confidence to the point where you'd double point Zaha after we win 4-1. You know what's going to happen. It's a schoolboy error. It had 1-0 Tarkowski or something goal written all over it. Woods, obviously, in the end.
To be fair, all my other players that I've got in there had tough matches. I think I moved Son from my captain to Wilf, because potentially, if you look at it on paper, it's the only we look like the only team that could give out a tonking. And I genuinely, I completely understand where you're coming from with the they haven't won, therefore they'll win against us kind of thing. But I genuinely had confidence going into yesterday's game because Burnley have been abject.
I mean, it's okay. We all know that he has a head injury at the moment. So thinking that we're going to hand out a tonking, we can forgive him, I think.
Yeah. And what about you, Terence? Obviously, no Schlupp. Were you surprised by that? And on the bench, there was a lot of defenders. I mean, I sort of thought maybe he had in his mind QRA could move to midfield, but what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a bit strange. I wasn't surprised Schlupp wasn't in. I think Eze was always going to keep his place after his performance against Leeds, that was for sure. I think he's comfortable playing Schlupp in the middle when we had a three in there. I'm not sure he'd be so comfortable playing him with a two from the start. So that didn't really surprise me in that sense. But I will say, you know, spare a thought for Wilf, you know, having had a baby during the first lockdown, his missus is fresh to pop, and, you know, having to self-isolate, whether it's self-isolation or whether he actually has COVID doesn't seem to be clear. But, you know, it's a difficult time enough at the moment trying to have a baby in the way the restrictions are in hospitals. So I hope for him it's just having to isolate and that he can be there for the birth and everything of that.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. The comments from Hodgson after the game about, you know, him being possibly available and them hoping doesn't mean that he's going to be available for Newcastle for the reasons Terence just stated. One thing I wanted to ask you about from the starting 11, Terence, are you and Bats up front? I mean, it's an experiment that hadn't really been tried before. What were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, again, it didn't really surprise me. Roy Hodgson loves Ayew's work rate, and, you know, it's his place to lose after last season. I guess I know he went through large periods where he didn't score last season, but he did finish our top scorer. And I don't want to say he's never let us down, because that's not true. But, you know, he's going to work hard. He's going to run his socks off, and that's what you want in a game away from home at Burnley. Batshuayi has been doing well in the international breaks. He's been very unlucky with scoring a few goals that have been ruled out for offside, so deserves a chance. But I think they both didn't cover themselves in glory last night.
It did make me laugh in the preview pod when you talked about him scoring for Belgium and then you assuming that it was still offside. and I think Hambo mentioned in the watch along, and when I say the watch along, we're watching it live on YouTube and just basically commentating on it. He mentioned that it seemed like we were trying to out 4-4-2 Burnley. And Nick, do you sort of know what he means? Were we trying to out shit house the beasts that are Burnley? And obviously it didn't work particularly well in the first half. Is that how you saw it in the first 20 minutes, half an hour of the game?
Kind of, but it was... Our defence seemed to not know what they were doing some of the time. And even Gaeta had a couple of moments where he sliced the ball out. Something was wrong at the back. Had that not been the case, then it might have actually worked a bit more. Do you know what I mean? It was a silly mistake that led to their goal. And of course, Kouyaté, we can't really blame too much because he's had such a good season. But I see what you mean about the setup, but we didn't exactly take the game to them, did we? And that's the problem we have. With Leeds, we knew there'd be loads of space with the way that they play, and we could utilise that space if we got the chances. Burnley are a pretty tight unit, so we always struggle to break teams down when they're like that. And we talk about that under 23 goal, which I've just had a look at, 19 passes. We had one moment in the game where we actually strung four or five passes together and there was lots of movement off the ball. If we're not moving off the ball, we're not going to beat any teams because we were just so static all the time, I thought. So, yeah, it just wasn't very inspiring, was it?
Well, I mean, we did have, according to the stats, we had 496 passes against their 425. And I always worry when we've had more than 50% possession because that usually means we've lost. But I think the thing I wanted to bring up was they were knocking the ball up in the air and playing it straight, very direct to their strikers. Not in a breakaway, catch us on the counter way, just proper hitting it up in the air. And to me, that seemed a little bit what was undoing Dan and Kouyaté. There seemed to be enormous space between them at times. And I think they both made some individual mistakes. But, you know, as you say, they've had a decent season. So it's hard to quite pinpoint what was wrong. What did you see, Terence?
Well, I mean, Scott Dan, a couple of years ago, Roy Hodgson bought him in at Burnley completely out of the blue. He broke up Sacco and Tompkins and bought him in to deal with that long threat. And he's tend to deal with it well in the past. That's why I was a little bit surprised to see Kouyaté starting. I could see him being moved out if Cahill's fit. And putting Cahill alongside him to handle that aerial threat. You know, these are two, you know, more your down and dirty centre-backs where Kouyaté's more, you know, he's a midfielder. He's not getting his head stuck in all the time and things like that. So I would have preferred to see Cahill alongside him to deal with that threat. And obviously it happened very early in the game that Kouyaté's misread that header and so somehow the stats are charging Scott Dan with the error for the goal, but I don't think he can be held accountable for having his back to Kouyaté misheading the ball into him. But well, there you go. But Scott Dan's done well there in the past, and I think it's more to do with Kouyaté. And you know, he's played centre back a lot this season now, particularly for his country as well, and he's going to be getting more and more used to the position. But I think in this sort of the way this game was, which is unusual to all other games we play, I think it was just a little bit too much of a step up for him.
Yeah, interesting. I think you summed it up for me well there. It was different to, I think, any other game in the season and probably different to what I expected Burnley to do.
One point I will say, I found really interesting watching the Spurs All or Nothing documentary on Amazon Prime. It's one in there, I think it's either the last episode or the penultimate episode. One of the physio guys asked Michel Vorm in their lead up to the Burnley game, saying, who's the Dutch equivalent to Burnley? And Michel Vorm just laughs and says, what are you talking about? Like every Dutch team tries to get the ball down and play football. It is incomparable. There is no team like Burnley in Holland.
Well, excellent. And as a man that's been to Burnley and played a gig there, there's probably not many towns like it either. So I just wanted to bring up Klein and PVA. I mean, we know what to expect for PVA. Klein, still a little bit of an unknown quantity, but looking at their heat maps for the game, basically the majority of their time was spent in or around halfway up the pitch. Have we got to the point where Hodgson is looking at overlaps from the wing-backs as part of the tactics of going forward, and was it effective? Either of you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. With Ward and with Mitchell, it's not quite like that, is it? When you're playing Klein and Van Aanholt, they're both more forward-thinking. They both have a lot of pace. They want to get forward, and they look a lot more comfortable doing it than Ward and Mitchell do. So you have to play them higher up the field, and it should be a good way for us to press onto teams. And you know, we had more possession, we particularly in the second half, we had a lot of the ball in their half, so you'd expect to see them further up the field. But defensively, I think they're both Klein, even in his first spell when he broke through at Palace, wasn't that great defensively. He just had such rapid pace, he could often get himself out of trouble. And the same sort of goes to Patrick Van Aanholt as well. And in the modern game, I think you've got to accept that most fullbacks have those defensive frailties because they're trying to get forward so much. I mean, you can easily find clips of Trent Alexander-Arnold getting mugged off constantly. I mean, Zaha did it to him when we lost 2-1 at Selhurst last season. It just made him look like a fool defensively. So you have to accept those frailties exist if they're putting, you know, turning out further down the field and creating goals or scoring goals, as, you know, Patrick Van Aanholt has done in the past. So I've kind of got over his defensive frailties because of his forward-thinking output. And yeah, this is a good way. This is the way we're going to break down those two solid blocks of four or four and five, as we saw against Burnley, you know, where you got one of the centre forwards dropping deep into that midfield as well every time we're off the ball. That's how you break these teams down. You create overlaps and underlaps, and we did it to relative success. We did create some chances last night, but yeah, we've still got a long way to go before we, you know, we're at that 40% that Steve Parish talked about in that interview. You know, we're 40% of what we can be. And that's true on the field as well. You know, if we get towards that 100%, we'll be performing like Man City.
Yeah, I mean, that brings me really on nicely to the next point I was going to make. Because I felt that Klein had another good game going forward, including a decent strike early on, but he was the outlet for Townsend. But in the second half, when we had all that chance, when we had so many chances, obviously, we don't need to go into them. You know about them. If you listen to this pod, you've watched the highlights over and over again. Benteke's save from Pope, the one-on-one with Bats. We don't need to go over. On another day, like at Leeds, they might have gone in. But were we too narrow? Considering we had two effective wing-backs, were we too narrow in the second half? Were we trying to thread the ball through the eye of a needle? You know, we were getting the ball to the edge of their box, but they just had 10 men behind the ball. Were we too narrow, or was there something else about it, or was it just not our day?
It was one of those games, wasn't it, where it wasn't going to happen. I mean, you mentioned that save from Pope. That was incredible, wasn't it? Any other day, that would have gone in. And the miss from Benteke as well. Well, I'd say any other day that'd go in, but it's Benteke, so we can't do that. It's hard, isn't it? I'm just kind of questioning Batshuayi whether he's the right man for the job. I know he's the only one we've got at the moment. He's scoring goals for Belgium. He's not scoring goals for us. I mean, what's the difference in the way we're playing that he's able to do that? Do we think?
I mean, he's scoring goals. He's just offside.
Yeah, and he was offside a lot last night. And I'm thinking a lot of balls could have been played in had he just stepped back a couple of steps, because he was in an offside position, and perhaps that's why the balls weren't being put in from Townsend. Well,
I can give you one example of why he scores goals for Belgium and not for us is the chance that MacArthur flashed the ball across the penalty area, across the goal line, basically, and Batshuayi couldn't get on the end of it. When he's playing for Belgium, it's Kevin De Bruyne delivering that pass and not James MacArthur.
I've got a sneaky feeling he would have been offside for that. I really do.
It would have been extremely tight. They would have had to get the old MS Paint lines out again. But
I did wonder, because MacArthur was properly busting a gut, yesterday when it seemed like maybe the rest of the team had realised that we were going to lose the game with a couple of minutes to go. He was still busting the gut. Whether he's trying to get himself out of the voluntary retirement that he made himself for Scotland so he can play in the Euros next season, but we'll see. So, I mean, that does bring us on to what was our second topic, and that is, I think this season we could say that compared with our expected goals, we've done well, we've finished well, we've scored more, certainly more than we did last season. Scored a decent amount. We scored four last game, which we didn't manage the entire last season. But there's a stat that came out on Twitter this morning from Matchday 365. And they've said Crystal Palace's strikers, i.e. Benteke, Batshuayi, Wickham, Tosin and Sørloth, so that's not including Zaha before you come at us, have combined for 26 Premier League goals since the start of the 2017 season, 123 games. And obviously, that doesn't include just Palace, but that's an average of 0.21 goals per game. So, would either of you like to comment on that stat? Is it just freakish, or is it another of the long-running issues we've got with goal-scoring strikers?
I've talked about it before, haven't I? We're the graveyard where strikers come to die. And I mean, this links in as well with the other tweet that's been going around by at MCFC Sam. Christian Benteke outscoring Premier League legends, a thread. And it's basically, you know, Christian Benteke's goal outputs between 2012 and 2013 season and the 2016-2017 season, where he scored 66 goals in 154 appearances. And if you look at similar goals in to appearances ratios over this period, you know, you can look at the same periods and he's better than Drogba, he's better than Van Persie, he's better than Andy Cole when he was at his peak, better than Carlos Tevez, better than Wayne Rooney, better than Robbie Fowler. You know, all into his second season at
Michael
Palace.
Michael Owen's the one I know is stuck up.
Michael Owen to the show. Well, yeah, exactly. You know, if you look at 154 appearances, Michael Owen scored 64 goals, Benteke scored 66 goals. And, you know, it's something's happened. I mean, we obviously stopped playing to his strengths very, very quickly. You know, Allardyce played to him and, you know, the ball was punted to his head a lot and he scored a lot of goals in that first season. Then he got a bad injury. Where it just makes it sad, really, that, you know, what could have been for us with the striker that he was. And we always think every season, can he rediscover that form? But he doesn't do it. But it doesn't surprise me. I'm surprised it was as many as one in five, to be honest, the goal scoring rate amongst our strikers.
Well, now, I mean, I must have brought that average up because he scored nine last season, he scored one this season before. So he's got nearly half of them.
Which, you know, what's insane as well, though, is I've got the Brighton 1-0 victory recorded on my Virgin box, and I watch it every now and then when after games like last night when I need some cheering up. and I think they say, you know, it's when he scores in that one, you know, he's ending a 15 odd gold game goal drought in that one. So he went large periods where he didn't score as well and would score. In fact, did he get nine last season?
Nine last season. Oh, that might have been in total. I'm not sure. I'm sure someone correct us.
I remember.
Yeah, I think maybe it was. I'm thinking seven for some reason. But, you know, it's not prolific, is it? It's not, you know, at our level, what you'd be thinking, we want someone who's going to get somewhere between sort of 15, 16 goals, ideally, and we just haven't had that for a long time.
Apart from Wilf.
But what he lacks in goals, he makes up for in just being the most lovable human being. carry on.
Said, apart from Wilf, I mean, I was the one that cried when he finally scored against Grimsby. It was such a relief because he had such a barren spell, wasn't he? So
Wolves. He cried at Wolves. He cried at Wolves when he scored in the league. Yeah,
I cried at the Grimsby goal after 86 minutes of watching that toss.
Oh, I was celebrating so hard because that was at a point where I was pre-babying, still going to every game, and I'm just like, I've got to go to Grimsby. I've got to go to Grimsby on a Tuesday night, you know. And I'm not as young as I used to be, where that might have excited me.
Right now, we'd all kill to go to Grimsby away in the fucking League Cup.
So. Yeah, just back to you were talking about injury and how Benteke's not been the same. I can't remember who said it. It was either Murray or Townsend. But when they had their injuries, they said afterwards they had to change the way they played to adopt to their new physicality. and kind of did well out of Murray. Murray. Benteke hasn't really done that, has he?
Yeah, no, Andros Townsend did talk about that as well. He talked about how he lost his acceleration off the spot, and for too long after that, he tried to play like he still had that explosive pace. And he, you know, he long realised he didn't and had to adapt his game. And yeah, but I mean, Benteke still wins the ball in the air a lot. Maybe the injury has something to do with it. He's definitely lost a little bit of pace, but he's not been someone who's always relied on his pace. His dominance is in the air when the ball's crossed to him in the penalty area, and we've just not done that. Especially under Hodgson, it's not just not the way Hodgson plays to get balls into the box. Although, ironically, the only time we ever seem to put high crosses into the box is when Benteke's not on the field, but that's a chat for another day, or a chat I think we've probably overdone, to be honest.
Well, but, I mean, I can add something that we don't usually add. So, according to the stats on who scored, we made 24 crosses against Burnley, against their 11 against us. We had 15 shots, 10 from open play. Let's not talk about the dead ball stuff. I was annoyed that Townsend was taking it. I could see the reasons why. They obviously thought that Eze's way of taking things didn't suit against the tall Burnley defence. But the stats suggest that we did put in service yesterday. How many of those were whilst Benteke was on the pitch? I don't know. And what counts as a cross? I certainly don't remember 24. But, you know, they played 83 long balls against our 49, and 48 of those were probably from Guaita. So the stats don't reflect what we all think. So something, perhaps it's the way, certainly Townsend put in a lot of crosses, but they tended to be from starting point of inside the shadow of the 18-yard box. Which is not what you traditionally think from a cross. You expect it to be from near the byline. So, I mean, Terence, you're absolutely right. I've done it to death, and there's not necessarily much point in talking about it again. But the only thing I wanted to bring up was stats on Batshuayi, who a lot of people said had a really poor game against Jay Rodriguez, who got man of the match, or as Eddie Howe kept referring to him, Jay Rod. so their ratings were quite similar, 6.5 against 6.27. They both had two shots. Their pass success rates were both around 80. Jay Rodriguez had two dribbles against Batshuayi's one. Batshuayi actually won a couple of aerials and Rodriguez didn't. And they were both dispossessed three times. So stats, you really can take anything from them. Certainly from watching the game, it looked like old J-Rod's considerably outplayed Batshuayi, but you can take stats to mean anything. So we're just going to end the discussion on Burnley with remembering what was said in the preview pod. So producer Sam, would you kindly just tee up something that Terence said for me, please?
I mean, we're five points off the top. We're 3 points off of six, off of fourth, sorry. So, you know, why not?
We've been here before.
As soon as we start talking about anything positive, we won't win for six games or whatever. But, you know, our run of games coming up is favourable. If you're going into this, we don't play anyone really till the 12th of December. So Burnley, Newcastle, West Brom, if we found a way to get victories in all those games, we're going to be coming, we'll be in the top four come Christmas or approaching Christmas, which is pretty mental.
So, yeah, I mean, there was a point in the previous show where yourself and Heskis referred to Will finally getting his dream of Champions League football with us. any comments before we move on?
I think you all know, and everyone who listens to the preview pod knows that we're all having a laugh and talking tongue in cheek there, and that's definitely towards the end of the show as well, where we're a couple of beers in. So, did I lie? Our fixtures were favourable, and you know, we should have been good turning up to Burnley and expecting to win the game. And you know, you talked about 15 chances. That's our most chances we've had in a game since the opening game of last season, or not the opening game, our opening win when we beat Aston Villa. So that's the most chances we've had in a game since then. So we probably could have won the game, but the problem is, you know, we set up to play defensively very often, but we have five clean sheets in our last 30-odd games. Riddle that one out.
Well, yes. Let's have a break on that. We will come back and have a little word about Pitch Sports.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Funtime videos, choose your match day squad, post match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So yeah, our sponsor, PitchSport, they are a rather lovely app where you can choose your starting 11 ahead of the game, make your predictions, and then after the game, review players, and then see what the general consensus is. So, Nick, can you talk us through who ended up being man of the match according to Palace fans, and how accurate were your predictions?
Well, I predicted a 3-0 win for Palace, and I got the lineup totally wrong because I picked Wilf. Other than that, Eze got man of the match. Most people predicted a score of 2-0 to Palace, and only 29% of Burnley fans correctly predicted a win for them. So, you know, it shows how much they thought they'd have. The good thing about it is you can rate everything from what you thought about the team selection, the referee, the manager and the atmosphere. And quite obviously, the atmosphere is always going to be zero stars. It's quite interesting.
Well, it depends how good the person is with the audio, isn't it? I give it extra atmosphere when they pull in like a, you know, a cheeky comment when the goalkeeper kicks it out or something like that. You know, you just hear the fans go, you know, I'd maybe give him an extra half.
I'd like to see the board that the bloke who does that has got in front of him, what labels he's got on all the different buttons, because obviously he's got to be pretty nifty to know when to shove in a your shit ah, hasn't he? And whatever. Sorry, just got to keep Sam busy. You can also have mates on there. Now, I'm on there, and you can link up with your friends. They don't give you easy codes, so I'm going to repeat my codes. Once you go on the Pitch Sport app and you want to compete against me, my code is ZSPZVW. That's ZSPZVW. Perhaps when I tweet out my squad selection for Newcastle, I'll actually put my code in, so...
Yeah, and who was
my man of the match? Was Gyro. Surprised he was bought off, really, because he's one of our creative outlets. He wasn't having his best game, but as he could have been, but I don't think he was up to what he was against Leeds. But then none of the team really were. We were too nervous.
And Terence?
My man of the match, it had to be Eze. I mean, he was, you know, very forward thinking. There was a couple of times where, you know, the easy pass was on for him to just play it in and hold possession to keep it on. But a drop of the shoulder gets him round some really good pressure, and all of a sudden it opens the field up for him. And I think there was quite a few times where, whether it was Ayew or Batshuayi, were caught on their heels from his fast thinking and firing passes into them to try and bounce it off of them, and them just not being prepared for it. So again, that I've talked about this on the preview pod, that will come with game time, that those link ups will start to work, we hope, as the season goes on. But yeah, he's just a breath of fresh air, and I just can't wait to actually see him in the flesh.
Yeah, it's testament to him that I actually thought my man of the match was Townsend, but that's because I'm already expecting a high level from Eze, even after a couple of games. So, yes, a good point.
Hang on, wait. So wait. Did you just say your man of the match was Townsend?
Yeah.
We've got to have a falling out over this. Indeed. Because I think it's been quite a hot topic on Twitter about about his performance. I think on Who Scored, he was actually our highest rated player, but stats can lie, as we've already previously discussed. He passed the ball to the sideline what felt like more times than he passed the ball to Crystal Palace players. And it wasn't... I can forgive players, a bit like Eze did a couple of times in the game, if your pass is trying to go into the penalty area onto a run where it's a high-risk, high-reward pass, I can forgive that. Townsend ruined promising positions multiple times by either passing the ball into the touch or just giving the ball away from simple five-yard passes. And it was infuriating to the extent that when he took off Riedewald and brought on Schlupp instead of doing it for Townsend, whoever it was, when Riedewald came off and it wasn't Townsend, my remote nearly went through the TV. But thankfully, I managed to hold on to it.
Well, I'm just going to counter that by saying that after they went 1-0 up and we were really struggling, it felt to me that the only player that was really willing to take things by the scruff of the neck for a 20-minute period where we were looking like we could, you know, we could go to the point where we were just 10 men behind the ball was Townsend. And I dare say a decent amount of those 24 crosses were those sort of diagonal balls he put in from the edge of the box for that period. I don't think he had a great game all the way through, but I don't think anyone particularly did. But yeah, I probably, if I hadn't already got such a high opinion of Eze in a sort of Zaha style way, I'm sure I would have given him man of the match. But I've already sort of got him on a high level to start with. So yeah, I thoroughly take on those points. Right, let's get some listener feedback. Ash Easton. Some of this we've already covered, but very disappointing last night and proves we need to keep Wilf. On the goalkeeping front, why don't we catch the ball anymore? Up front, nobody looked like they wanted to be there. Defence looked the same. Well, let's just touch on the goalkeeping front. So, Guaita's had a bit of criticism recently for some non-accurate balls, but is that because he's been asked to play long balls and is punching an issue, or is it just what he's comfortable with?
That's what he's always done. It's not been a problem in the past. He'll claim it when he feels like it's right to do, but at the moment he's under a bit of pressure, he elects to punch, and that's just always the way he's been. And it's more of a European style of goalkeeping. So I've got no problem with it. As long as he gets distance on it like he so often does, it shouldn't be a problem.
In defence of him, he did sweep very well last night, I thought, on a couple of occasions.
He did, which was needed at times, definitely. From Bella Bite Me on Twitter, why the insistence on starting a toothless IU? If he's dropped, then this allows Eze to move centrally. Then we PVA or Schlupp for the left. Is Hodgson going to do that?
QPR fans, we've said it ever since we bought the player that he's primarily a player that plays in the centre, but Roy wants him out on the left, and if what Roy wants, Roy will do. I can't comprehend why he'd do that, because seeing him I know on his heat map he drifted in a lot and he seemed to do better there. Maybe he's trying to make him a more complete player by being able to play in many different positions. I don't know. But if he's better in the middle, bloody play him there. Because we got Schlupp. Schlupp can play on the left. I've got no problem with Schlupp out there because he's somebody who'll run with the ball and put the willies up anybody he's running towards. He really will. He's got the speed. He's got the burst of pace. So, yeah, it's beyond me why he's not playing in the middle.
Putting the willies up, people. Excellent. Leif Anderson's forehead. I'd personally like to thank Roy and the team for that magnificent performance to put me in a great mood for my working week. Excellent. Robert Bailey has no thoughts that can be repeated. Fair enough. Jedi, can we bring back PPV so we don't have to watch that rubbish? Excellent. At Saber 74, Sai, do we think Batshuayi has been spending too much time hanging around with Benteke? He's finishing his starting to look similar. Terence, is that harsh?
Yes. I mean, is it that one he pinged in against Brighton from the offside position? That wasn't too terrible. I think he should have scored last night, but at the same time, you know, Nick Pope's a fantastic goalkeeper. Sometimes it's all very easy to look at your own players and criticise, but at the same time, you know, this is a man who's pushing for England number one spot. He's a fantastic shot stopper and twice made himself very big to deny our two Belgium strikers.
Yeah. Gary's asked him when we're announcing the shirt competition stuff. I'll do that in a bit. I've been told to read a statement out. And he's also asked, why as a club do we always seem to show such faith in players when they've clearly not been contributing? Benteke, Wickham, to name a couple. Wickham, I'm not sure, comes into that because he's barely played. Benteke, you know, only came on for, 13 minutes. I'm not sure that's the case at the moment. I don't know what you guys think. I think at the moment, more than it has been the last couple of years, the players that have been doing best for us on merit are the ones that are starting.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think keeping faith with Wickham was a lot more to do with off the field and his mental health and actually looking after him than actually his playing time and stuff like that. And he won't get another new contract now. He's got himself back on his feet. So expect Connor Wickham to go in this summer. Benteke, we need to retain some sort of value. He's big money on our cost sheet, so we need to try and get some sort of transfer fee for him at some point. And you know, our cost sheet will look a lot better once we get him off with some money and get his wages off the weekly bill. That's for sure, especially for his outputs. But you know, I think it's time for him to move on. I think it'll be best for everyone.
A couple more. Frenchy, question on yesterday's performance. What the fuck was that? I think we've tried to cover that, but fair point, Frenchy. And then Greg Eggs, I really hope that's your real name, Greg. Playing too narrow again. Townsend always looking to cut inside on his left foot rather than using width. Eze doing the same. I think we've kind of covered that. Is Eze responsible for some of the narrowness?
Absolutely, but then that's where Klein and Patrick van Aanholt are supposed to do the overlaps, underlaps down those flanks. And I think. You know, there's still an element of learning this 4-4-2 in the way that we're trying to play it with the new personnel and making it work. I think if you look back to the Ruben Loftus-Cheek season, towards the back end of the season when it all started to click for everyone, we annihilated teams, and I think that could come further down the line this season that we'll stick a few past a few teams. But maybe that's just blind optimism.
I like the positivity. I would hazard a guess that if it was Hambo and DR, it would be less positive. Right, let's have a quick preview on Newcastle. A team looking down the list of results since we've been in the Premier League, it's just up and down. In my head, we don't have a particularly good record against them. Particularly remember that 1-0 defeat. I think that was a couple of seasons ago. They scored with about 5 minutes to go. I think it was John Joe Silvey. But yes, we've actually won two of the last three. So what are we predicting in terms of how we're going to go about beating a Newcastle side, which I think is quite hard to understand what you're going to get from on a week-to-week basis at the moment? Let's start with you.
Well, I've had a quick look at their forum to see what their fans think of how they're doing, and they seem to think that the players like Steve Bruce because he just lets them doss about in training because they have zero clue what they're doing on the pitch. They rank 20th in the league for shots per game, 20th in the league for shots per target, 20th in the league for touches in the opposition box. They're trying to outdo us, aren't they? So they're not very good. I think might have been Robbie Savage called them abject in their last game. So it's bound to be a win for them. So we've really got to, I'm learning quick. We've really got to take the ball to them. We really have, because we're talking about that under 23 goal earlier, where the 19 touches. If we can pass and move, which is surely the basics of football coaching, pass and then move to a place where you can get
work for Liverpool, didn't
pass
it?
The ball and then move somewhere where you can get the ball back from the player you've just given the ball to, rather than keeping your shape. And surely we got to start taking some teams apart if we do that, but it's hard because what Roy's doing is working in some games, but not working in others. And we're doing the same thing every game, it would seem.
We've got to take the ball to Newcastle like Hesketh's dog Boyd took his ball to the vet.
Exactly.
Newcastle have been a bit of a mixed bag this season, and but the Chelsea game, they their last defeat, they were absolutely dreadful, and abject is the right word to put across to them, but Callum Wilson is out, and this is huge. You know, they've got Andy Carroll up front, and the successes he's had against us in the past, he's not the same player anymore. And without Callum Wilson, their goals do tend to dry up. He scored a lot of them this season. So it's certainly, they looked dreadful, but Burnley have looked dreadful. So who knows what's going to happen without Wilf. They're going to be any team, you know. Eddie Howe talked about it on Sky Sports last night, saying, you know, when you go against Palace, when Zaha isn't playing, you notice the difference. So they all know that it's a little bit easier. So Newcastle will be all week talking about, the short week that we have, talking about how, you know, Zaha's out. This is our opportunity to get things back up and running. So who knows? Just hopefully it won't be Saint-Maximin that, you know, has one of these days where, a bit like Bolasie did, where occasionally he just turned into an absolute world beater and tears you apart.
I mean, to me, it's got Andy Carroll written all over it, because Andy Carroll light, Jay Rodriguez, tore us apart yesterday. You know, obviously styled himself on Andy Carroll from about 2016. That Andy Carroll's world beat was probably the last goal he scored, and that was against us. So, I've got fears of another 1-0. But what do you think Roy will have learnt from the Burnley game? What would you like to think he's learnt that will be done differently?
Well, I don't. It's two completely different opponents, I think. I'm not sure he learned anything differently. Whether it gives him an excuse to, you know, MacArthur was a bit below par, so maybe he can get Kiarte into the midfield, finally get Cahill alongside Dan in defence. We might see some shifting around there, because you've got to think long term. He's going to want Cahill in that back four, so maybe, especially with the lack of clean sheets we've been having. So, you know, if you look at the clean sheets we have had of those five I was talking about, four of them were all in a row, wasn't they? Or at least three of them in the 1-0, 1-0, 1-0s just before the first lockdown. And yeah, Cahill was instrumental in those games. So, you've got to look at getting Cahill back into that back four. So potentially that could happen if he's fit enough to do it. Does Joel Ward come back in? I don't know. I don't think against a side like Newcastle, maybe more against a side that is a bit more attacking, you maybe would see that. But I don't think he's emblazoned with options at the moment, is he? You know, he's pretty much going to have to be the same team, maybe with the odd tweak here and there. But other than that, it's going to be a 4-4-2. It's going to be Eze. It's going to be Townsend, very likely. And we go again and see if Batshuayi can finally get on the end of something legally.
Well, I'm hoping that whatever tactic was used for the corners for Burnley is abandoned, and we go back to Eze, who looked so good with dead ball situations against Leeds. I think we'll probably leave that there, unless you two want to mention anything else about Newcastle.
I'm just gutted we can't be there. I know a couple of Newcastle London fans, and we'd be drinking with them before the game and stuff like that. So gutted still, as always, that we can't be there just yet.
Well, I mean, the news has been positive this week. Presumably London's going to be tier two, so it might still be a while, but if we can get even to 1-3, that might mean that we get a couple of games each before the end of the season. Let's hope that the bubbles we requested are allowed, and we actually get to go with people we know rather than just standing on our own like Billy No Mates. So what you've all been waiting for, and what I really don't understand, is the results of the competition that was put on Twitter. So I'll read a statement from our patriarch Mikey, producer Mikey, who's not producing today because it's Sammy's. He decided to copy, I think it was Tesco's idea. So he's written this as though it was a police statement. On the 10th of November, we launched a Twitter competition. All we asked people to do was quote retweet one of our tweets. The tweet read, quote tweet this tweet and get zero likes, zero retweets and zero comments by 10 p.m. tomorrow, and you'll win this season's home or away shirt. We had hundreds of responses. Most people were taken out of play by other entrants liking, commenting or retweeting their messages. However, we did have some winners. I'd like to say I tried it myself, and I said to anyone that liked or commented my tweet, that their favourite band was The Lost Prophets.
That one and only.
Yeah, that one. Shinobi versus Dragon Ninja. And Mark Drew, a long-term listener, liked my comments. So you are indeed a Lost Prophets fan, sir. Someone else said you're a fan of Jimmy Savile. If you like this, within seconds, someone had liked his tweet. So that was the kind of tactics people were doing. People were retweeting.
Set up accounts, blocked Back of the Nest, blocked anybody to do with Back of the Nest, and retweeted it. And still somebody managed to get through, even though I had zero followers. I don't know what the score is there.
I believe if you blocked the Back of the Nest account, that wouldn't have worked because Mikey looked through, and if he couldn't see it, then it wouldn't have worked.
I would have unblocked it with an hour to go, though.
I see. That's clever. That's giving people ideas. So can we have some kind of drum roll, Sam? Can we have some kind of ambient music? Excellent.
No.
That'll do. So
if it's not in the show doc, it's not going anywhere. All right.
So the winners of three shirts, and apparently this is quite specific as well, please email hi@backofthenest.com. That's hi@backofthenest.com by 8 p.m. this Thursday with your shirt preference, size and address, and we'll arrange for these to be sent out. I don't know what happens if you reply at 2001. But
can we make that clear that it is high as in H-I and not H-I-G-H?
Yeah.
That gets you. That's a completely different email address.
But I'm sure if you DM us on Twitter as well. So the winners are @CPFCEZE. So that's CPFCEZE. You've won one. At Palace Matt, but this is Matt with three T's. So at Palace Matt with two T's. I'm sorry for getting your hopes up and then shooting them down. And then at CPFC Luke 2. So again, at CPFC Luke, sorry, you've been shafted. It's at CPFC Luke 2. So all three of you have won a home or away kit of your shirt of your choice. Yes, so get the email in, and I don't know how we've come across those, but yeah, somebody's paid for them for you. So
is it actually a Palace shirt, or is Mikey going to say it's actually a Brighton shirt they've won?
No, it's a proper Palace shirt. There's more here. We're aware that people did enter, but had certain privacy settings enabled, which meant we were unable to verify their tweets. Exactly 10 p.m. on the 11th of the 11th, 2020, we recorded ourselves scrolling through every entrant visible to us and found the three winners. The people who had these privacy settings turned on, unfortunately, did not show on this list and were therefore not considered as winners. If anybody would like to see this recorded evidence, please email hi@backofthenest.com, and we're happy to verify the steps we took to ensure this competition was 100% fair to everybody, and this statement shows that this is more airtight than either my divorce statement or the time I got arrested.
Mike Fairley is just sounds like a blast at parties, to be honest.
He does indeed. But then he's put he's highlighted this, but don't worry, there's a new competition. Please visit our Twitter page now. The tweet went live at 8 o'clock on Tuesday, so that's before we started recording, and find the relevant tweet. Follow the information on this, and you could win a shirt with Wilf Zahar on. You've until Saturday at 20 o'clock, so don't delay. Do not delay. There are a few terms. There's only one shirt available to win. You must get a full hour on your tweet with no likes, retweets, or comments. Any privacy settings that hide your tweet will be voided and not entered. We'll record the winners when the competition ends out of fairness. Please visit at WPDigital2 on Twitter for an example of the shirt and other Palace merch. So I presume the fine people at WPDigital2 have provided us with merch. So thank you very much. So yeah, you can win another shirt. So if you didn't win before, you can win now. And that is indeed enough of that.
Sorry, is there Skiff doing a competition to win his dog's balls in a jar? For those that don't want to go for the shirt, I think DR might be interested.
Or his dog's removed foreskin, I presume, as well.
Wow.
Beautiful. That'll come. He'll empty a jalapeno jar, leave a little bit of the brine in, and it'll be in the bottom. It'd be lovely. It'd be better than the shirt. Yeah, we'll stick that up as well. Heskiff, I'm sure, will provide you with information. But yes, thanks for listening, and special thanks for those who did get in touch. We did read out absolutely everything, and it did go towards the show. We just can't fit it all in. Thank you. Please keep doing it. Thank you to Nick and Terence for keeping me company, Sam for producing, coming up with all the clips, and mainly you lot for listening to this crap even after that Burnley game. So until next time, come on, you Palace.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by pitchdmm.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.